The second parak, starting out with Mishnah Aleph, continues to deal with Erechin, but immediately thereafter, starting with Mishnah Beis, and throughout the balance of this parak, we will take a digression, but the next parak, parak Gimel, we will get back to talking about Erechin. Mishnah Aleph starts as follows, Ein be'arachin pachos misela velo yaser al chamishim sala. If you look in the psukim dealing with Erechin in Vayikra Chav Zayin, it dictates if somebody says, I'm going to give the Erech, either of somebody else or myself, it states how much you have to donate, and as we've discussed, it's based on two variables. Variable number one is the gender of the person, of the subject of the donation. And number two is the age of the person who is the subject of the donation. So for example, on the high end, the highest end, the highest band, is if somebody donates the erech of somebody who happens to be a male, and the age of that male is between 20 and 60 years old, the amount that has to be given is 50 slayim. 50 slayim is that. We just look on our chart. We don't have a chart, but we can imagine a chart based on the psukim, and it says male, female, age, and we just look up the amount. That's going to be 50 slayim. That's going to be the highest amount that you're going to give. Now, if we look in the psukim as well, the lowest amount that we're going to be given based on the psukim is 3 slayim, and that's for a female, a young female from 1 month old up to 5 years old. So that should be the lowest, but nonetheless, there's a pasuk that continues in Vayikra Chav Zayin talking about the Erechin that says if somebody can't afford the amount that they committed to, they would basically go to a kohen, and the kohen would appraise the amount that they can pay, and they would have a dispensation to not pay the full amount. We'll talk about how much they have to pay. But at a minimum, what they have to pay is going to be one sela. So even though that's below what would be required from the psukim, but if somebody can't afford it, that kohen can give a dispensation, and it can be as low as one slayim, one sela. And accordingly, now we can understand this first statement in the Mishnah, and it will be repeated again shortly. Ein be'erachin pachos misela. When it comes to erachin, there's going to be nothing lower to pay off your debt than a sela. That is talking about a poor man when he receives a dispensation from the kohen because he can't pay the full amount that he committed to. V'lo yaser achamishim sela. And there's not going to be any more than 50 sela. Why is that? That's talking about based on the pasuk. A man, somebody is giving the erech of a man who is between 20 and 60 years old. That is going to be a committed to amount of 50 slayim. Ketzad. And now we're going to go into more detail on this. Nasan sela v'heshia. What's the situation? That if somebody, in fact, had a dispensation from a kohen, he had the dispensation to give one sela because he couldn't afford to give whatever he committed to, and thereafterward, after he paid, he became wealthy. He made a lot of money. He won the lottery. V'heshia. Or he just has enough to pay off his amount that he committed to. Ain't no saying Klumi doesn't have to give any more because he already paid, even though he paid the lower amount, but he fulfilled his netter, he fulfilled his obligation, and he is no longer obligated in giving anything any further, even though he had committed to something higher, but he paid the amount of the dispensation, the amount that the coin said, and he gave the minimum amount, which was one sela. Pachos mi sela v'eshir. If somebody, however, paid less than his committed to amount, he paid less than a sela, and thereafterward he became wealthy, he has not paid off his debt. He has not paid off what he was committed to do, and accordingly, he gave nothing. It's considered as if he gave nothing, even if he gave a half a sela. No sin chamishim sela. If he indeed committed to 50 sela, 50 slayim, he's going to have to pay the full amount. Now we get into the interesting question. Somebody who is unable to pay the full amount that he committed to, but he can pay more than one sela. So let's give an example. He committed to pay the amount of 50 slayim. He said, I'm going to give the erech of a man, and that man happens to be between 20 and 60 years old. Look on the chart, 50 slayim. And he comes to the coin, he says, I can't afford 50 slayim. The coin says to him, well, what can you afford? I have 5 slayim. I can afford that. So will the coin, when giving this man a dispensation, will he dispense with the entire amount except one sela? He just has to give one sela, or should he give everything he's able to give, which is 5 slayim? So this is a machlokas. Haya biyadav chamei slayim. In fact, if he had in his hand, he's able to afford 5 slayim. Rebbe Meir Omer, Eino Nosin Ela Acha. Still, the dispensation dispensation. If you're not paying for the full amount and you get a dispensation, that coin is going to give you a dispensation, the full amount down to give the minimum. You're only going to have to give one sela on the other end. V'chachamim omri nosen es kulam. Chachamim say you're going to have to give the full five slime, as much as you can give towards your commitment. That is what you should pay. And now we're going to repeat the statement we started the Mishnah with. Ein ba'arachin pachos misela v'lo yaser al chamishim sala. In fact, as we said, when it comes to arachin, there's never going to be a situation that you're going to get away with paying your commitment less than a sela. You're always going to have to pay a minimum of one sela, but you're never going to have to pay more than 50 slayim. And the Gemara explains, why do we repeat this? Because this is based on the sheet of Chachamim. The sheet of Chachamim says, if you can pay more than the one, you have to, because we're medayik as follows. Ein barachin pachos misal, even though there's not going to be less than one, but there are going to be times that you can pay more than one. Like, for example, if you had five or if you had eight and you're able to pay more than the minimum one, even though you need a dispensation, this is going to be like the shita of Chachamim. Now, just look at that last statement we saw. This is going to create a template for the next couple of Mishnayos that we're going to see. Like this Mishnah, Mishnah Beis, and Mishnah Gimel, it says, Ein be'erachin pachos misela. When it comes to erachin, there's not less than this, and that there's not more than this. And we're going to look at a number of situations in the halacha not relating to erachin that is going to have that same template. There is not less than this, or is there never less than this, and there is never more than this. There's never less than X, and there's never more than Y. So now we're going to go forward to something that is fairly complicated. Fairly complicated, very complicated. We're just going to do it in a very cursory way. And what we're grappling with here is if a woman forgets where she is in her Nida cycle. And just on a high level, the cycle lasts a minimum of 18 days. The first 7 days is called the cycle of Nida. So if she sees 1 day, or if she sees 2 days or 3 days, it doesn't matter. She has to wait out the full 7 days. That is the Nida cycle. And then thereafter, she goes to mikvah, and thereafter, there's a set of 11 days. And if she sees blood in those 11 days, that's not considered Nida blood. That is considered Zava blood. And there are its own halachas when it comes to Zava. Did she see 1 day or 2 days or 3 days? And how long does she have to wait after? That's fairly complicated. And the Mishnah is going to tell us that if we have a woman and it's called her Toa, it means she made a mistake or she's confused and she forgets where she is in her cycle. Is she during the first 7 days? Is she during the 11 days? And she sees blood. How does she handle such a situation? And what the Mishnah is grappling with is how does she get back on track to know when she sees a flow that is the first flow of a Nida cycle? Maybe it's a Zava. Maybe she's seeing blood during the 11 days after her 7 days of Nida. So how do we get back on track? And on a high level, what it's going to say is in order to get back on track, you have to have a minimum number of days that you are clean, that she is clean, and those days have to be consecutive days. And the Mishnah tells us that in order to get back on track, and it's going to depend on the situation, it's going to be a minimum of 7 days and a maximum of 17 consecutive clean days that she has to see in order to know that the next time she sees blood, that is the beginning of her Nida cycle, and not that she is during the 11 days and she is seeing a Zava flow. So it goes as follows. Ein Pesach. Pesach here literally means opening, but it means here, and just note this, we are still doing that same template that we saw just before this. There is not less than this. There's never less than this, nor is there ever more than this. So Ein Pesach, Batoe pachos mishiva, when it comes to restarting the Nida cycle, for a woman who is confused, she is made a mistake and doesn't know where she is in her cycle, there is never going to be a time that we are able to reset her Nida cycle if she has seen fewer than 7 consecutive clean days without any blood. And there's never going to be a situation, v'lo yaser al shiva, so there's never going to be a situation that we're going to need to have more than 17 days, that's consecutive clean days, in order to reset the cycle. And just on a high level, we're not going to go into detail here because it's unbelievably complicated, is we'll start with the second statement here. As we said before, there are 7 days of Nida. If you see blood, it goes up to 7 days. You have to wait the 7 days, even if you just saw 1 day, 2 days, 5 days. You have to wait the full 7 days, and there afterward is 11 days. That means the cycle is 18 days, and after those 18 days, it's not a set 18 days, it's a minimum of 18 days, such that if you see after, if the woman would see blood after those 18 days, whenever it is, day 19, 20, 30, that is the beginning of the new cycle. That is going to be the first day of the Nida cycle. So what it's saying here is because the minimum cycle is 18 days, 7 plus 11, what happens is if she saw a blood flow for 1 day, then we need to have, in order to complete that 18-day cycle, we need to have another 17 days, consecutive days, clean days, plus the first day of the flow, and the 7 day, assuming she had a flow of only 1 day, then we're going to have 17 days clean in order to get to the 18th day. And thereafterward, the first day that she sleeps, that's going to be the reset. That's the Pesach. That's going to be the reset of the Nida cycle. So that is going to be the maximum of 17 clean days. And the minimum of 7 days is going to be that if she saw a flow for 13 days. So she bled for 13 days. In order to reset the Nida cycle after those 13 days of seeing blood, she's going to need to have 7 clean days. And after those 7 clean days, thereafterward, when she sees blood, that will be the beginning of her new Nida cycle. That is discussed in detail by the Bartanura and the Gemara. A lot more detail around that. How about if she filling in all the days between those, between 7 clean days and 17 clean days and all the math? How about it was 8 days, 9 days, etc.? We will leave that to the side for now. We are going to get to the next statement, and this is again the same template, and we will see it a number of times in the next two Mishnayos thereafter. This is talking about when somebody has tzaras. It's talking about either tzaras on his body or tzaras on the house. And what it's saying is there's a whole process and procedure that the kohen comes and confirms that it is indeed tzaras. And when it comes to ein b'negayim pachas meshuvua echad, when it comes to tzaras in somebody's body, there are two types, that it could be that there's only going to be a confinement of that individual until he is declared one way or the other. That can be a minimum of 1 week, meaning everything can be cleared off after that 1 week. You may not, you don't have to go longer. It may only be a week if we're talking about a couple types of negayim on a person. However, when it comes to negayim on a house, if there are tzaras on a house, the lo yaser shlosha shavuot, it could be then, this is the maximum amount, that it could have to go through 3 confinements in order to achieve a final decision. So there's going to be a minimum of a week when it comes to negayim, tzaras on a person, but it could be a maximum of 3 weeks, 3 confinements when it comes to the tzaras on a house. Mishnah Beis continues with our template that we've seen in the prior Mishnah, that there is never less than X, but no more than Y. And we're going to see that applied in 4 different dinim, 4 different halachas, that there's never less than this, and there's also never more than that. So the first one we're going to look at in Mishnah Beis is talking about months. And as we know that the Jewish calendar is a lunar calendar, and what that means is we wait to start a new month when we have a new moon. At the time of Chazal, it used to be that witnesses, when they saw the new moon, they used to go up to the Sanhedrin on Gadol in Yerushalayim and testify, "We saw the new moon." And on a high level, when the moon goes around the sun, that path, that process takes approximately 29 and a half days. However, we can't have a new moon based on a new month based on partial days, 29 and a half, approximately 29 and a half. We have to make a call. Is this going to be a 29-day month or a 30-day month? So the Mishnah is going to tell us that there is never going to be a situation that we are going to have fewer than 4 months that are full, that have 30 days. In other words, if we have 4 months that have 30 days in it, the other 8 are going to have 29 days. And in addition, we are likely not going to have a situation that we will have 8 months or more than 8 months that are full. And the Mishnah says as follows, in Pochasim Arba Chodashim Aburamu Hameubarim Bashana, we are never going to have fewer than 4 months that are Mu'ubar. Mu'ubar literally means pregnant, but it means folk here. Instead of 29 days, it's going to be 30 days. V'lonira Yaser Al-Shmona, as the Bartunu explains, Chachamim would strongly prefer to never have more than 8 Mu'ubar full months as well. Just a little bit background on this. There are a lot of complications when it comes to should a month be full or should it not be full. It has to be 29 or 30 days. It can't be 29 and a half. And some of the complications relate to that. It's not exactly 29 and a half days. If we're 29 and a half days, in theory, we could have 6 months full and 6 months not full. But even that wouldn't work out fully because there are certain requirements. Says, for example, when Rosh Hashanah falls out, Rosh Hashanah cannot fall out on certain days, and accordingly, the month before or other months have to be adjusted so Rosh Hashanah won't fall out on the days it can't fall out. So those are some of the complications that lends to these requirements that Chazal would adjust the number of days in various months, but within the requirements of this Mishnah, then when it comes to full months, 30-day months, it shouldn't be more than, it cannot be more than, less than four, it can't be fewer than 4 months that are full, and it shouldn't be more than 8. Next, Dean, number 2, is talking about the Shtei Alechem. Shtei Alechem was the 2 loaves, literally, that's a korban that was brought on Shavuos, and this is going to talk about how many days would go between when the bread was baked and when it was eaten. It was eating on Shavuos, but it had to be baked before Shavuos, the day before Shavuos. So that's a minimum of 2 days. The day before Shavuos, when it's baked, and the day it's eaten on Shavuos, a minimum of 2 days. But what happens when the day before Shavuos, which you would otherwise be baking the Shtei Alechem on, is a Shabbos? If that's the case, you would have to bake the Shtei Alechem the day before, and that's going to extend it, the time between when it was baked and eaten, from 2 days to 3 days. So the Mishnah says as follows, Shtei Alechem ne'achalos ein pachos. Mishnah, the Shtei Alechem would be eaten not fewer than 2 days from when it was baked, v'lo yaser al shlosha, and not more than 3 days from when it was baked. That's the situation again when the day before was Shabbos, you have to bake it a day earlier on Erev Shabbos on Friday. And again, we're seeing this template that we saw in the prior Mishnah again and again. So this is now going to be the third time we see it. This is talking very similar about the Lechem Apanim. Lechem Apanim, the showbread, was baked on Erev Shabbos and it was 12 breads, 12 loaves, and was replaced on the Shulchan inside the Heichal on Shabbos. So that's when the replacement was. The old one was taken out, the new was taken put in. The Kohanim would eat it on that day, and the new Lechem Apanim would sit there until the next Shabbos. So because of that, the next Shabbos is 8 days later. From Shabbos to Shabbos is not 7 days, it's 8 days, and they would have to bake it not on Shabbos, but the day before Shabbos. So they would break it on Friday, they would put the new Lechem upon him in on Shabbos, and it would wait until the next Shabbos to be eaten. That's 9 days later. So Lechem upon him, ne'echal ein pachas mitotisha. The Lechem upon him would be eaten not fewer than 9 days after it was baked. Baked on Friday, eaten 2 Shabbos later, that's 9 days. But there were times as well that it would be longer to wait than 9 days. And we're not going to go through all of the situations when it would be, we did the 9 days, but when it would be 10 days, but we'll go straight to the 11th day. V'lo yaser al achadasar. And it's never going to be more than 11 days between when it is baked and when it is eaten. When is that? So as we said before, it's baked on a Friday. What happens? Okay, we'll do the 10 days also. If Friday is Yontif, so you couldn't bake it on Yontif, so you have to do it the day before, you'd have to bake it on Thursday, so between Thursday and eating on the next Shabbos, not that immediate Shabbos, but the Shabbos thereafter, where that would be 10 days. But what happens if it's Rosh Hashanah on Thursday and Friday? You're supposed to bake it on Friday. And it's Rosh Hashanah Thursday and Friday, so you have to push the baking forward to Wednesday. So between Wednesday and 2 Shabbos later when it's eaten, that is going to be 11 days. And similarly, this is halacha number 4 in the same template. Katan Nimo, we're talking about baby boy that was born and his milah typically 8 days later. So katan nimole in pachas mishmona, never going to have a bris fewer than 8 days. So the baby is born, you're going to wait till the 8th day and you're going to have the bris. But there are times you're going to have to wait until the 9th day. For example, what happens if that baby was born during a weekday on Bein HaShemashos, twilight? So you don't know if that is today or tomorrow. So for example, today is Monday, so he was born during twilight after sunset, but before Tzeis HaKochavim on Monday. Is that considered Monday? Are we going to do the bris next week, 8 days later on Monday? Or is twilight associated with Tuesday? So we're going to have to wait until the Tuesday the next day. So that is the time that, because of that suffix, we're going to wait till 9 days. We're going to wait till Tuesday. But what happens if that baby was born in twilight on Friday going into Shabbos? So as we said before, so just wait, because you don't know if it was born on Friday or Shabbos, just wait until the next Shabbos. That'll be the, instead of the 8th day, the 9th day, but you cannot have a bris out of suffix because maybe that's not the right day. Maybe the bris should have been the next Friday or the next Shabbos. We don't know because of that suffix. We're going to have to wait until the next day, Sunday. That's going to be 10 days. And what happens if the Sunday is Yontif? So we're going to have to wait till the day after Yontif. Instead of Sunday, we're going to wait till Monday, and that's going to be 11 days. But what happens if, instead of it being just a Sunday Yontif, it's Rosh Hashanah on Sunday and Monday? So because of that, we had this baby boy that was born Bein HaShemashos, Erev Shabbos. Is the bris supposed to be on Friday, or is it supposed to be on the next Shabbos? We can't do it on Shabbos because it's a Safek. We can't do it on Sunday and Monday as well because that's Rosh Hashanah. So we're going to have to wait till Tuesday. Accordingly, the Mishnah tells us, well, yes, or Ashnei Masar, you're never going to wait longer than 12 days for that bris. That's going to be the situation we just talked about. We had that Safek going into Shabbos. We don't know when the baby was born. Rosh Hashanah is the next week thereafterward. Actually, 2 weeks later, it's going to be after the bris on Sunday and Monday. So the 12th day is when we are going to do that bris. So again, this is, you'll never have a bris fewer than 8 days. A minimum of 8 days is when we have. That's the normal time, bismano. But there are times, because of the suffix of baby born Bein HaShemashos and Rosh Hashanah falling during those days, lo yasel shnemasar, we're never going to have to wait longer than 12. But we are in that situation, going to have to wait 12 days from when that baby was born. Mishnah Gimel continues our template of there is no fewer than this and no more than this. And it applies it to three additional halachas. The first one talks about the blowing of the trumpets in the Beis HaMikdash on a daily basis. And when we talk about the blowing of the trumpets, we're talking about three blows. They're sets of blows. One is a tekiah, one is a chua, and one is a tekiah. So when we say three, or when we say nine, it's going to be three is going to be tekiah, chua, tekiah. Nine is going to be made up of three sets of those three, tekiah, chua, and tekiah. And what we'll see shortly is that there were 21 minimum blasts each and every day, and that's consisted of the three blasts to open up the gates in the morning, open up the gates of the Beis HaMikdash, and then there were nine for each of the two Tamid offerings, so nine for the Korban Tamid Shel Shachar, and an additional nine for the Korban Tamid Shel Bein Harbaim. So that's three to open up the gates, and nine, it's a total of 21. So the Mishnah says as follows in our template, Ein Polchasin Me'asmi V'achas Tekiyos B'Mikdash. There are no fewer than 21 blasts of the trumpet in the Beis HaMikdash on a daily basis. And in addition, V'lo Mosifin Al Arba'im U'Shmoneh. This is discussed in detail in the Mishnah and the Gemara in Sukkah. So we'll just stick with the text of our Mishnah. There was no more, no day would have more than 48 blasts, and that was Erev Shabbos during Sukkot, that then they had the 21 basic blasts, and in addition, there were 12 for the Nisuch HaMayim during Sukkot, there was an additional 9 for Musaf, and because it was Erev Shabbos, there were an additional 6 to warn everyone at different times when Shabbos would be starting, that they should head home from work, head home from the fields, and another 3 right before Shabbos ends. So it's a total for the Nisuch HaMayim, 12, Musaf 9, Erev Shabbos 6, is the same on every Erev Shabbos. That is a total of 48. the next halacha deals with the music. In fact, the next two halachas deal with the musical instruments accompanying the Levim singing in the Beis HaMikdash. So the next halacha says as follows, when it comes to musical instruments, this is talking first on a daily basis, there were actually musical instruments, a string instrument that was played during the bringing of the Korban HaTzibur, and that they were accompanying the Levim as they sang during the bringing of those Korbanas, the communal offerings. So the Mishnah says as follows, Ein Polchasin Mishnei Nevalim, there would never be fewer than two of these Nevalim. This could be a lyre, L-Y-R-E, it's a type of musical instrument, some sort of string instrument, so there were never fewer than two clang together to accompany the singing of the Levim. V'lo Mosifim Al Shishan, there were never more than six of these string instruments playing at a time. And then the third halacha is similar, but this is talking about on certain days there were additional musical instruments, talking about flutes. Ein polchasin mishnei chalilim. We'd never have on these specific dates that we'll list shortly. There were never fewer than two flutes playing. V'lo mosifim al shneimasar. And there were never more than 12 flutes playing. And now we are going to list out the days that the flutes would play to accompany the Levim singing during the Hallel. It was 12 times that the Chalilim would be played in front of the Mizbeach. And now we have the list. Number one, Bishchitas Pesach Rishon, the shechting of the Korban Pesach. First, the normal Pesach, that is on the 14th of Nisan. So during the shechting, there would be singing of the Hallel. So to accompany the singing of the Hallel, there would be the playing of these Chalilim, the playing of the flutes. And number two, day number two, Bishchitas Pesach Sheni. This is the 14th of Iyar, Pesach Sheni, when the Pesach Sheni was being shechted, together with the singing of the Hallel as well. And number three, Yom Tov Rishon regional Pesach on the first day of Pesach, Hallel Shalom was said. Number four is Yom Tov Shel Atzeres, that is the first day of Yom Tov, it's only one day, of Shavuos, that's number four, and another 8 days, Ubishmona Yemei Achag, the 8 days of Sukkot that we say Hallel Shalom. In addition, there would be the playing of the flutes. And in addition, two more related halachas, when they be playing these flutes, it would not be a flute of copper, abuv here means a flute of copper, but rather it would be a flute made of reed. Why would that be a reed flute? Because it sounded much nicer. We want to have the most nice sounding of the instrument, so when we're having the flutes, use a reed flute. And in addition, when they would be playing together, we said there were a number playing together of these flutes, a minimum of two, a maximum of 12, but when they would complete the music, says the Mishnah, they would end off with only one flute that would be playing, because it sounds nicer. So although there would be 2 to 12 flutes playing together with the Hallel, but at the end of the playing of the flutes, it would be only one, because that's what sounded the nicest. Mishnah Dalet is a continuation of the prior Mishnah, and we're going to now discuss who would actually play the flutes and the other instruments in the Beis HaMikdash to accompany the singing of the Levim. What we are going to have now is three different views, and we're going to explain each of them with the Bar Tanura. So we are going to start as follows. Opinion number one, who can play the instruments? Va'avdei ha-kohanim hayu, divrei Rabbi Meir. They could even be the avadim, the slaves of the kohanim. It's talking about Canaanite slaves, not even Jewish slaves or servants, but Canaanite slaves. They would be able to play the instruments in the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Meir is of the view, and we're looking now in the Bar Tanura, Ein Ma'alin Min HaDukhan LeYuchsin V'lo LeMasros. An important concept here, that if we saw them participating in the Avodah, they were on the Dukhan, that's what it's called, participating in the Avodah here, we would not extrapolate from the fact that they were playing or having other involvement in the Avodah there, that they were Miyuchas, that we could have them marry our daughters, for example, or Masra, so that we should be giving them Maaser because they are Levim. And accordingly, because we don't extrapolate from their involvement, it's called Ma'ali Min HaDukhan, we don't extrapolate from their involvement, from playing the instruments, either to Yuchas or to Masras, accordingly, we have no concern, what's the problem, there will be no negative consequences, so even an Eved Kenani can be playing those instruments. That is the view of Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Yossi is the second view. Rebbe Yossi Omer Mishpachos Beis Hapkarin Ubeis Tzefaria. These were two prominent families. Then they were from the location of Ume Ama Omhayu. So they were from that location, prominent families, but they were Yisraelim. They were not Levim, they were not Kohanim. And he is saying that these were the families that would play the instruments, Masi'in LeKahuna, and the Kohanim would marry their daughters to the men of these families. What's going on here? So back to the Bar Tanura explanation, Masin Lekuna, Kohanim Ayu Nosim Es Menoseim. So to these prominent families that you, they were Yisraelim, the Kohanim would marry off their daughters. Shemim Mishpachot Miuchasot Shebisol Hayu, because they had Yichus. Here, what, in other words, Rabbi Yossi is saying is, if you see somebody on the Dukhan, if they're playing the instruments, for example, indeed you would extrapolate from that, you will learn from that, that these are Miuchasim, that these people have Yichus, and you can marry your daughter. Their background has been checked into. You can marry your daughter to them. But we would not extrapolate for Maser purposes. Just because they're playing the instruments, it doesn't mean that they are a Levi. That would not be a concern. But Yichus is something that's born. Accordingly, you can't have an Eved Kanani. It has to be somebody who is Miyuchas, because people would see that they're involved. They would marry off, even the Kohanim would marry off their daughters to them. In opinion number three, the strictest is Rabbi Hananya ben Antigonus Omer Levim Hayu. Not only could they not be Avadim, they couldn't be Canaanite slaves, and not only could they not be Yisraelim, but Rabbi Hananya ben Antigonus is of the view that they even needed to be Levim. And why is that? Because, as explained by the Bar Tanur, Ma'ali min Aduchan Lamasra. So if you see somebody involved, he's involved, he's playing the instruments, that's Ma'ali min Aduchan. Not only can you assure yourself that they have good yichus, but people would also assure themselves, if you saw somebody involved, you know that his background was checked, you know he's a Levi, so you would be able to give the maaser. So because people are, we are mali min aduch al maasers, you can bank on it. You see somebody involved that he has not only yichus, but also he's a Levi, you can give him maaser. Accordingly, it was required that it would only be Levi'im who would be playing the instruments and not the other categories that we aforementioned. Mishnah Hey, and thereafterward, Mishnah Vav are going to follow a new template. We are going to have items that have a lower limit. That's just like we were saying before, the lower limit on X. But here, instead of having an upper limit on Y, we are going to have no upper limit. So that's going to be our template. Three halachas in Mishnah Hey, one in Mishnah Vav of things that have a lower limit. We cannot go below a certain number, but there's no upper limited. And we're going to start out talking about the Korban Tamid at the time that we had a Beis Hamikdash. On a daily basis, two Korbanos were brought, called the Tamid. It was brought one in the morning, one in the afternoon, the Korban Tamid Shashachar, Korban Tamid Shaben Arbaim. Tla'im were used, lambs were used, so you needed two each and every day. Well, let's put that aside for a second, and let's talk about the first Korban Pesach, which was also a lamb. So the first Korban Pesach that was in Mitzrayim, which was in Egypt, the obligation was to separate it and keep it. So the separation designation of that Korban was on the 10th of Nisan, and it was only used 5 days later on the 14th of Nisan. How do you get to 5 days? So it had to be separated 4 days in advance of the usage on the fifth day. So the 4 days are the 10th, the 11th, the 12th, and the 13th. And it was shechted on the 14th. And we learn from that. We learn from that. The Gemara explains that first Korban Pesach, that applies for the Korban Tamid and the Beis Hamikdash, that it had to be separated. Why separate it? You had to check it for mumim to make sure that it didn't have blemishes that would invalidate it. So you'd have to separate it 4 days in advance, use it on the fifth day. So the Mishnah says as follows, because of that, that we are basically always running a cycle. We're going to separate them and use them 4 days later, separate the next on the next day and use those 4 days later. So at a minimum, and we'll tweak this in a little bit, at a minimum, because you needed 4 days in advance, you needed eight lambs available. Two a day, 4 days, eight available. But one day, each day, you're going to be using some. So if we look in the morning, before we use the Korban Tamid of the morning, we'd have eight in the chamber that we would keep them. That's called the Lishkas Atlaim. But if we look at the afternoon, we would have used two of them. We're down to six, and then we'd have to replenish another two and bring it up to eight. So the Mishnah says as follows, Ein pochasi mishisha tlaim hamivukarim belishkas hatlaim. There would never be fewer than six lambs that had already been checked. You want to check that they have no blemishes that would invalidate them in the lishka, the chamber that they held the lambs that would be used for the korban tamid shel shachar and the korban tamid shel ben arbaim. So there were never fewer than six. Because eight in the morning, but they used two during the day, so you're left with six, and then they would replenish them that given day for 4 days later. And the concept here, and this is going to be a little cryptic, we'll read the Bartanur on this, Kedai LaShabbos uLishnei Yamim Tovim Shel Rosh Hashanah. This is not a statement that you needed only for Shabbos and when you have Rosh Hashanah on Sunday and Monday, for example. That's 3 days, and you have to be ready for the fourth day. The Bartanur explains what's going on here is this is a mnemonic. It's an easy way to remember, Simana Ba'almanakat. It's coming to teach us that just like when you have Shabbos and then you have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah right next to Shabbos, for example, after it, so the Tuesday Korban Tamid, you have to have that ready from Friday before. So that is from Friday before we have Friday, we would separate it for the next Tuesday, Friday, and you can't separate on Shabbos. We have Friday, Shabbos, and the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, which is Sunday, Monday, that's 4 days, and used on the fifth day. This is coming to remind us that this, the amount of time that you need to do it each and every day. It doesn't only apply for when you have Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah next, that 3 days in a row. It applies all the time. That's just a mnemonic for us to remember that you had to separate it 4 days in advance of usage on the fifth day. And having said that, that's the minimum amount, the six and the eight in the morning, the six in the afternoon, mosifim al olam. And there's no cap if you want to have the chamber of lambs full. Full for the next 2 months, not a problem whatsoever. That would be a great thing. Next halacha, number two in this new template, Ein Pochasin Mishtei Chatzotzros Umosifin Ad Le'olam. When it comes to the Chatzotzros, we talked about in Mishnah Gimel that there were daily blasts of the Chatzotzros, which were the trumpets, and there were 21 on a minimal amount. The fewest was 21, the maximum was 48. So when you had those Chatzotzros, that when they were calling people, when you were doing the blows of the trumpets, it would be a minimum of two that we'd be blowing together at the same time, and there was no maximum number of chatzotzros that could be blowing at the same time. And the third halacha in our Mishnah, continuing the concept of musical instruments in the Beis HaMikdash, Ein Pochasin Mitisha Kinoros, when they had the harps, that's the kinor, that were used to accompany the singing of the Levim, there would never be fewer than nine playing together. So that's the minimum. And again, our template, Umosifim Ad Le'olam, and there's no maximum, there's no cap. You can have numerous kinoras playing at the same time to increase the beauty of the music in the Beis HaMikdash. And just another comment here, it's not about our template here, but when it came to the Hatzilzal, those are the symbols, Levad, you would only have one set of symbols because they were very loud. Somebody would use by one person, but he would clamp them together, making music. You only want to have one set, so it would not drown out everything else. So although the other instruments that we've talked about in this Mishnah had a minimum and no maximum, and in previous Mishnah we talked about other instruments that had a minimum and a maximum, when it came to the cymbals, you would only have one set of cymbals, one person playing the cymbals at a time. Mishnah Vav has the fourth and final halacha in our new template of having a minimum amount but having no maximum amount, and it applies that template to the Levim singing on the Duchen. We've mentioned the Duchen before, and that was actually a stone platform in the Chatzar. The Chatzar is the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, and the Levim would stand on that Duchen, on that platform, and sing during specific parts of the bringing of the Korban Tamid. So we will be talking about how many Levim had to be singing, the minimum amount of Levim, and again, there was no maximum, the minimum amount of Levim. We are talking about Levim above the age of Bar Mitzvah. We are not talking about below the age of Bar Mitzvah. That will be in a little bit, talking about could they be involved in the singing as well. Ein Pochasin Mishnei Masa Levim Omdim Al HaDuchan. There can be no fewer than 12 Levim standing on that duchan, on that platform, during the singing of the Korban Tamid, Umosifim Ad La'olam, and you could add on, it's unlimited, there's no cap on the number of Levim. Now, why 12 specifically, a minimum of 12 singing? So the Bartanura explains you'd have to have at least 12 singing because you'd have at least another 12 playing instruments at that time. You'd had 9 Nevim playing the harps and another 2 playing the lyres, the Knevalim, and another 1 on the cymbals. That's a total of 12, just like you have 12. Actually, we had a machlokes who would be playing the instruments, but let's say Levim for now, it doesn't really matter. You had a minimum of 12 people playing the instruments, so too you need at least an equal amount of Levim singing at the time, so 12 and 12, a minimum of 12 Levim singing on that ducha. Now, how about if the Levim brought their kids, and they're below the age of bar mitzvah, could they sing along as well? So the Mishnah tells us, Ein katan nichnas la'azar la'voda, a katan, which means child of a Levi, is below the age of bar mitzvah, cannot come in and do the avoda, can't come into the azara to do the avoda, ela b'shah shalavim omdi mashir, except at the time that the Levim were singing, they would be able to sing along with the father Levim, with the grown-up Levim, not necessarily fathers, but Levim, the Levim who were of age, but these were below age. They were not permitted, though, below age, below the age of bar mitzvah, they were not permitted to play the musical instruments. They couldn't play the lyre. They could not play the harp. But they had to be bepeh. They had to be singing together. Why would we have them sing? Because young boys have beautiful voices. Could they lit and tevo b'ne'ima in order for them to give literally spice or harmony, tevel, harmony to the beautiful melody that the Levim were singing. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, ain oli l'minyan. Even though we let the smaller Levim sing along with the older Levim, but they would not count in the minimum requirement of 12 Levim singing. They would be in addition to those 12, but not included in the 12 vein. Omdim al ha-duchan. And also another distinction is they would not be standing on the duchan on that platform together with the older Levim. El abaretz hayu omdim. They would stand on the ground. V'roshem yibein ragli ha-levim. And it would look like because they, the little ones, are standing on the ground, the older ones, the taller ones, are standing up on the platform, it would look like the heads, and in fact the heads of the little kids on the ground who were singing, would reach the legs of the Levim above as they were standing on the platform. And in addition, another statement, Tzo'are Halavim Hayunikraim, they were called Tzo'are Halavim, talking about these below age of bar mitzvah boys. Tzo'are can be of one of two things. Tzi'irim can mean young, or it can mean from the word of tsar. They would cause sorrow to the older Levim. Why is that? So the Bartunua explains as follows, because younger boys have such beautiful voices, it would cause the older ones to have sorrow because they didn't have voices as beautiful as the young boys. And that's why they were called Tzo'are Alevim. Those young ones, they brought sorrow to the older ones.